Many's the time I've been mistaken, and many times confused. Yes, and I've often felt forsaken, and certainly misused. Oh, but I'm all right, I'm all right, just weary to my bones. Still, you don't expect to be bright and bon vivant so far away from home. So far away from home. I don't know a soul who's not been battered. I don't have a friend who feels at ease. I don't know a dream that's not been shattered or driven to its knees. Oh, but it's all right, it's all right, for we lived so well so long. Still, when I think of the road we're traveling on, I wonder what's gone wrong. Can't help it, I wonder what's gone wrong. And I dreamed I was dying. I dreamed that my soul rose unexpectedly, and looking back down at me, smiled reassuringly. And I dreamed I was flying up above. My eyes could clearly see the Statue of Liberty sailing away to sea. And I dreamed I was flying. Well, we come on the ship they call the Mayflower. We come on the ship that sails the moon. Come in the ages most uncertain hours, and sing an American tune. Oh, and it's all right, it's all right, it's all right. You can be forever blessed. Still, tomorrow's gonna be another world day. Trying to get some rest. That's all I've tried, to get some rest.
The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Your discretion is advised.
Without freedom of the press, no democratic form of government could exist.
We switch you now to London.
I'm standing on a rooftop looking out over London.
Good night and good luck.
Good evening from our CBS newsroom in New York.
NBC presents Chet Huntley and David Brinkley.
From ABC, this is World News Tonight with Peter Jennings in London, Max Robinson in Chicago, and from our desk in Washington, Frank Reynolds.
Good evening.
This historic legislation, the telecommunications law, will create many, many high wage jobs, will create opportunity and better lives for all Americans.
When the press is free, the people of a country are free. When the press is not free, the people of a country are in danger of slavery.
Keeping you informed with information, news, and the views of people making the news. It's the Nicole Sandler Show on NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
All right. Welcome to a Friday, and not just any Friday. It's the Friday before a long four-day 4th of July holiday weekend. Members of Congress, they're already gone. So if you're hearing news stories, and some people are tweeting out that, that the repeal only is on, don't buy any of it. Nothing is done. I'm sure, what's his name? Mitch McConnell is still trying to get something to the Congressional Budget Office to score over the next 10 days while the Senate is out on their 4th of July recess, so that they can ostensibly vote on it in the 3 weeks that they're back between when they return from 4th of July, and then they leave for the whole month of August. Look, you know where I stand. I say it ain't over till it's over. I don't trust that this thing won't go through, that they can't, you know, beg, borrow, steal, bribe members to vote. Mitch McConnell speaking, that he can't do that to get it done. I won't believe it until it's dead in the water. In fact, I won't believe it until Trump is out of office. But, you know, we go one day at a time. I got to tell you what crazy times we live in. You know, I played a set of America songs, being that this is our last show before the 4th of July. After today, I'll be back on Wednesday of next week. And we ended with Paul Simon's American Tune. It's a song about the dysfunctional nature of this nation. And it doesn't matter that it was written, I think, in 1972 or 73. It still holds true today. I don't have a friend who's not been beaten. I don't know a dream that's not been abused. I'm mangling the lyrics, but it holds true today. Go pull up the lyrics to American Tune by Paul Simon and you'll see what I'm saying. It's, you know, sometimes the more things change, the more they stay the same. And that was written during the time of Nixon. And here we are again in the time of Trump. What a wild past 24 hours this has been. Just listen, in the last 24 hours alone, Donald Trump endorsed the repeal of the Affordable Care Act with no replacement. We'll get to all of these. Chris Kobach's Voter Suppression Commission has demanded voter data from every state on every voter in America. Nice, right? The Wall Street Journal broke a big story. This time it didn't come from the New York Times or the Washington Post, but the Wall Street Journal has a new report out that says Michael Flynn may have been part of an effort to get to those Clinton emails that she allegedly deleted from her private server. Joe Scarborough and Mika Brzezinski say that Donald Trump used the National Enquirer to blackmail them. Yeah, that happened today. And I'm going to start with this one. I know I have it in What's News, but it's worth talking about because I didn't get to it yesterday. The House Appropriations Committee passed an amendment put forth by Barbara Lee to end that 2001 authorization for the use of military force. Now, granted, it was only an amendment to a Department of Defense funding bill, but still, she has introduced this amendment every year for the past, how many years? For the past 16 years or so. And this was the first time, not only did it passed almost unanimously. I've got audio. Here we go.
This should be bipartisan. This is about our country. This is about our troops. This is about Congress and our constitutional responsibility to do our job. And I remember, and many were here, many were not here, those horrific days after 9/11. This resolution came before the Congress 3 days, September 14th. It was overly broad. It was 60 words. And I think
words.
At this point, 16 years later, given the nature of the threats we face, that we should, in a bipartisan way, support my amendment. Thank you.
Again. Thank you, Ms. Lee. The question is on the Lee Amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say nay.
Nay.
Oh, in the opinion of the chair, the ayes have it. Thank you, Ms. Lee.
And listen to this.
Further amendments.
They applauded. They applauded.
Any further amendments?
How cool is that? There was one or two nays, but you could barely hear. Overwhelmingly, they approved this amendment the first time ever to get Barbara Lee to then tweet out, whoa, the Appropriations Committee passed my amendment. This is the first time she introduces it every year. Now, in all fairness, it's got to go on to the full House and then the Senate. But I think many of these members of Congress would be a bit reticent right now to give Donald Trump the authority to wage unbridled war, which is what, look, Barack Obama used that AUMF to do all his military incursions that he did over the 8 years of his presidency. And of course, we know George W. Bush used it as well. That 60-word authorization for the use of military force, maybe This is the beginning of the end. You know what? While you're calling your congressmen and senators about, you know, saving the Affordable Care Act, you may want to mention that as well. It could only do good to let them know that we care. Speaking of the Affordable Care Act, so Donald Trump this morning tweeted again. Yes, he was on the Twitter machine again. This time, this is what he tweeted. If Republican senators are unable to pass what they're working on now, they should immediately repeal and then replace at a later date. What he is talking about, first of all, they can't just repeal the entirety of the Affordable Care Act under the law, under the reconciliation rules that take just 50 votes, 50 plus one. But they could theoretically repeal those things that hedge on the budget, such as the individual mandate and the Medicaid expansion and the subsidies to lower income people who buy insurance on the exchange. Those things they could, but they won't. If they couldn't get enough votes, seriously, to repeal and replace with the shitty bills they've already put forth, what makes Donald Trump think that they could do this? Then again, Donald Trump has no understanding of how any of this works. On the other hand, well, or furthermore, I guess more accurately, the Congressional Budget Office already scored what a full-on repeal would mean if they just repealed the Affordable Care Act and went back to the way things were before it was passed. And let's see what they found. This was over a year ago. That analysis found that repealing those things would result in 32 million people losing coverage by 2026. 19 million of them would lose Medicaid coverage. So worse than either the House bill or the Senate bill that we've already seen. So, but you know, this is what Rand Paul is calling for. This is what Ben Sasse of Nebraska is calling for, and more of the conservative wing of the Senate is calling for a straight repeal. That's what they want. Again, it ain't over till it's over. I've had this thing here since it's Friday, and it's a sort of a slow day. I want to share this with you. It's a funny or die. I'm only going to play the audio because if I play the video, they'll definitely copyright me. But you remember, you remember Schoolhouse Rock. Of course, everybody does takeoffs on Schoolhouse Rock. This one, well, it's self-explanatory.
I'm just a bill. Yeah, I'm only a bill. And I'm sitting here on Capitol Hill. Well, I got passed by the House of Representatives here. And Trump was so happy he bought everyone beer. But then he went and called me mean. And I think I maybe know why. Cause if I pass, you'll probably die.
That's true. Yep, I will. Yep.
Hey! Why did they wait until the last minute to show you to anyone?
Maybe they just thought I was too good looking.
You sure it's not because you kick millions of people off their health insurance, screw folks with pre-existing conditions, and give a huge tax cut to billionaires?
You're an adorable little scamp, aren't you?
I'm just a bill. Yeah, I'm only a...
Wait! Didn't the Affordable Care Act have over a year of public hearings with dozens of amendments from both Republicans and Democrats?
Tell you what, if I pass, you get a big slice of chocolate cake.
Well, it's a long, long road to the Capitol.
It just seems like something that affects 1/6 of the economy shouldn't be kept secret. People should have a chance to know what's in you, right?
Right.
I mean, isn't this America? Are you gonna say something?
I'm just a bill. Yeah, I'm only a bill.
Don't let this bill become a law. Visit TrumpCareToolkit.org.
Don't I keep telling you about TrumpCareToolkit.org? So it's hysterical, except for the very end. And remind me, the gunshot part, that it bothers me, even though it's a funny bit at the end where they kill the kid asking the questions, it hits too close to home. In fact, you know what? We'll get back to the stories that happened this week, but I want to share with you an ad that you may have seen in the last few days. I don't know if the video will play or not. Well, we'll try it. If you're watching on YouTube, if not, you should hear the audio. The NRA released a new ad that you know, you wouldn't know it's from the NRA until you get to the very end, because, well, I'm going to play it for you. It stars a right-wing talk show host. Her name is Dana Loesch, and she talks to the camera. Well, let me just play it, and then we'll discuss it. Hopefully this will work. Let's see. Yeah.
Real news. They use their schools to teach children that their president is another Hitler. They use their movie stars and singers and comedy shows and award shows to repeat their narrative over and over again. And then they use their ex-president to endorse the resistance, all to make them march, make them protest, make them scream racism and sexism and xenophobia and homophobia, to smash windows, burn cars, shut down interstates and airports, bully and terrorize the law-abiding, until the only option left is for the police to do their jobs and stop the madness. And when that happens, they'll use it as an excuse for their outrage. The only way we stop this, the only way we save our country and our freedom, is to fight this violence of lies with the clenched fist of truth. I'm the National Rifle Association of America, and I'm the safest place.
Yeah, so there's Dana Loesch, and at the very end it says, I am the NRA, and join. That's despicable. Talk about trying to pit one side against the other, trying to incite people to violence. That's what that is about. Now, I think what's behind it is that gun sales are down in the Trump era because they're not out there screaming, Obama's going to take your guns, which, of course, he never did. But gun sales skyrocketed during the Obama administration. Now that it's a gun-loving Republican in office, gun sales have slowed down. So they have to do crap like this to try to try to ratchet up the gun sales, and I guess try to get people on the left to arm ourselves to protect against them coming after us. I also hate the fact that they conflate anarchists with, you know, Democrats and liberals. The whole thing is just despicable, but I couldn't let another day go by without commenting on that. All this stuff has been piling up this week. What else? There's so much more. And if you want to comment on any of it, feel free to call in 954-889-6410, or you can Skype in to Nicole Sandler. What else on my list? Oh, the Wall Street Journal report. There was a report, last night. It was on all, you know, like all the MSNBC shows, that this an opposition research guy from, I'm drawing a blank on his name, from the right, who has done oppo research for years and years. He was a big oppo research guy on Bill Clinton. He allegedly contacted hackers with Russian connections trying to get at those emails that Donald Trump so famously asked in one of his campaign speeches for the Russians to find for him. And turn over to him, and said that he knows Michael Flynn and he wanted to be an intermediary, basically, to get those hacked emails from the Russians or whoever had them. It's not Howard Phillips. No, it was Philip something. Trumantown. It's not that. It's something close. Anyway, that guy died. He was like 80 something years old. He died shortly after he spoke to the Wall Street Journal. But this is a big story that may have legs. Just I want you to be aware of it. So to keep an eye on that. Let's see. Oh, Joe Scarborough and Mika Brzezinski. So if you watched Howard Phillips. Okay, it is Howard Phillips. I guess so. All right. And he's now dead. Not that anyone's saying that his death was fishy or anything, but he did die shortly after speaking to the Wall Street Journal. But that story was published yesterday by the Wall Street Journal. I'll have more in What's News about that. So I was wrong yesterday when I was talking about the Trump tweet about Mika Brzezinski and, you know, bleeding from the facelift. I thought... Silly me. I thought that they were talking about something serious. I thought that they were discussing Rex Tillerson, the story about Rex Tillerson that Politico reported blowing up about the fact that he's not being able to staff up his department and that he basically lost his shit and you know, went a bit ballistic and is feuding with Jared Kushner. I thought that's what they were talking about when Trump tweeted his now infamous tweet. But no, now I have the audio. This is what they were talking about. They were making fun of him for the fake Time magazine story.
Fake covers of Time magazine. He was so needy, he had not been on Time yet, that he made his own. Okay?
Oh, my God.
This is your boss. This is your boss. He put this on display at least five of his clubs. It was first flagged by a reporter. Notice the
Trump is sitting on our front, even TV.
So I'm not going to play the whole thing, but they were making fun of him for the fake Time magazine covers that he is hanging now, we know, in at least eight of his golf clubs. Time magazine has allegedly contacted the Trump administration and demanded that they be taken down because they're fake. That precipitated the tweet now from Trump. I just got to play this because I love her now. Anna Navarro went ballistic. Listen to this.
Well, look, when I first saw the tweet this morning, I was frankly disgusted. I thought to myself, this dude has got such a fixation with women and blood. What is wrong with him? And then you remember that this dude, this disgusting dude, is the president of the United States. And you realize just how much he is diminishing the presidency of the United States. You realize that what he is doing is not just acting for Donald Trump. He's acting for all of us. He's acting for our president. And he is embarrassing. He is shameful. He is disgusting. And I'll say this about Republicans. I'm really tired of hearing words like disappointed, like disturbed, like I'm bothered, like I wish he wouldn't do it.
You think?
It's time that somebody looks at the camera and looks at him and calls him up and says, listen, you crazy lunatic 70-year-old man, baby, stop it. You are now the president of the United States, the commander in chief, and you need to stop acting like a mean girl because we just won't take it. We won't vote with you. We won't work with you. I can't start talking about tax reform. I can't start talking about health care reform because I can't get past the fact that we have a president who lacks the sufficient character. We have a president who is mean. We have a president who is nasty. We have a president who is immature, unstable, and just acts like a crazy person with anybody who attacks him because he's got thin skin and he is never going to pivot. And anybody around him, whether it's his daughter, his chief of staff, his wife, who I remind you had said her signature issue was going to be fighting against online bullying, or any Republican on the Hill, stop enabling him. Confront this and confront this hard, or it will never stop and it will embarrass all of us. It will take the presidency low, low, low.
You know, Anna Navarro really needs to learn how to express herself, to tell what she really thinks. Anyway, I just had to play that because she cracks me up. I used to really despise her when she was ranting about the Democrats. But now that she goes off on Trump all the time, I really enjoy listening to her. Anyway, this morning, apparently, Mika Brzezinski and Joe Scarborough were supposed to be off today to take a longer than the rest of us, 5-day, I guess, holiday weekend. But they came in today at 7 o'clock this morning to address the tweets that hit just as they left the air yesterday. Here's just a little bit of what Mika Brzezinski said.
It does worry me about the country. He appears to have a fragile, impetuous, childlike ego that we've seen over and over again, especially with women. It's like he can't take it. And I saw this happening yesterday in real time. We were talking about the Time magazine cover. The White House claims that we attack him. No, we report on his lies. We are upset when he doesn't tell the truth and he bullies people. That is true. We sometimes mock him and have fun with things like we did with President Obama with his bowling. And we were having fun with the Time magazine cover because it was hilarious that anybody would have their country club put up fake Time magazine covers of your boss. Or maybe an employer felt they needed to do that. I thought it was hilarious. I still do. I stand by my joke. I knew in real time that the president would be tweaked by that. And I wondered, oh boy, I feel there's going to be a response. And I'll tell you that. Think about it. It is unbelievably alarming that this president is so easily played. He's so easily played by a cable news host. Now, what is that saying to our allies? What is that saying to our enemies that this president is so easily played?
It says he's a little man. A little man. And the thing that she was saying that really tweaked him, to use her word, is that he's got teensy tiny hands. Yes. This morning, Donald Trump tweeted, "Watched low-rated Morning Joe for the first time in a long time. Fake news. He called me to stop a National Enquirer article. I said no. Bad show." Well, he may have right there inadvertently confirmed that he was trying to blackmail them, because allegedly, this according to from New York Magazine, from Gabe Sherman in New York Magazine, he wrote, "In mid-April, Scarborough texted with Trump's son-in-law, Jared Kushner, about the pending Inquirer story. Kushner told Scarborough that he would need to personally apologize to Trump in exchange for getting the Inquirer owner, David Pecker." What a name. The owner of the National Enquirer's name is David Pecker. It's somehow it's just fitting. Sorry, to get David Pecker to stop the story. Scarborough says he refused, and the Inquirer published the story in print on June 5th, headlined "Morning Joe Sleazy Cheating Scandal." Ooh. So I guess Trump there sort of confirmed that he was trying to blackmail the hosts of Morning Joe to get them to apologize to him. Oh, my God. What a thin, thin-skinned man. Yeah. All right. We'll take a break. My attorney will join us today. You may have heard him before, because Bruce Jacobs has been on the program before. We've talked about the foreclosure crisis in this country. This is what he usually deals with, and that's why he's my attorney, because our house is in foreclosure. But we were talking the other day about something related to that, and he just went off. He's I think he's toying with the idea of running for office. He's got a lot of thoughts to share. And so I thought on this Friday before the 4th of July, it would be a perfect time to have him share his thoughts. So Bruce Jacobs joins us in just a few minutes. But first,
I read the news today. Oh boy.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
So how's that First Lady anti-cyberbullying campaign going? Good.
The president of the United States on Thursday morning took some time out of his workday to tweet a misogynistic insult about a cable TV host, something that immediately became the top news story of the day.
The president tweeted, and I quote, "I heard
poorly rated Morning Joe speaks badly of me. Don't watch anymore."
"Then how come low IQ crazy Mika
and psycho Joe
came to Mar-a-Lago three nights in a row around New Year's Eve
and insisted on joining me?
She was bleeding badly from a facelift.
I said no."
Lawmakers from both parties joined in the condemnation. From Susan Collins:
"The president of the United States ought to be modeling the best of behavior. He should be an example for children. He should be an example for all of us."
"This is not about policy. It's about the person. It's about President Trump as an individual. I want to help him. I want him to be a successful president. Tweets like this are inconsistent with the greatness of the country and the office."
To Lindsey Graham and John McCain:
"It's hard to figure. I'm just embarrassed. I mean, I embarrassed isn't the right word. I just regret it.
It doesn't astonish me, because it isn't the first time that he has attacked various people that he has disagreement with. But so I'm not surprised, but I'm disappointed."
"This is maddening. It's maddeningly frustrating, because this is beneath the dignity of the President of the United States, or at least it should be. And it's a distraction. And it really, ultimately, it starts to undermine the president's ability to get his agenda done."
Pat Toomey and even Paul Ryan criticizing the tweets:
"Obviously, I don't see that as an appropriate comment. I think, look, what we're trying to do around here is improve the tone and the civility of the debate. And this obviously doesn't help do that."
At the White House press briefing on Thursday, Deputy Press Secretary Sarah Huckabee Sanders defended the president's actions and doubled down.
"He's not going to sit back and be attacked by the liberal media, Hollywood elites. And when they hit him, he's going to hit back. The president in no way, form, or fashion has ever promoted or encouraged violence. If anything, quite the contrary. And he was simply pushing back and defending himself."
In other news, the House Appropriations Committee overwhelmingly approved an amendment that repeals the 2001 authorization for the use of military force that has served as the foundation for the United States' foreign military incursions since the September 11th terror attacks.
"This is about our country. This is about our troops. This is about Congress and our constitutional responsibility to do our job. And I remember, and many were here, many were not here, those horrific days after 9/11. This resolution came before the Congress 3 days, September 14th. It was overly broad. It was 60 words. And I think at this point, 16 years later, given the nature of the threats we face, that we should, in a bipartisan way, support my amendment. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Lee. The question is on the Lee Amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say nay.
Nay.
Oh, in the opinion of the chair, the ayes have it. Thank you, Ms. Lee.
The measure requires that the 2001 AUMF be scrapped within 240 days. Congress would still have to approve a new authorization in the interim. Barbara Lee, who proposes this amendment every year, said she plans to continue to build support. The Trump administration reversed a decision late Thursday as its revised travel ban took effect and said fiancés would be considered close family members and therefore allowed to travel to the U.S., but grandparents still aren't. The 90-day ban took effect at 8 p.m. Eastern, along with a 120-day ban on all refugees. The state of Hawaii challenged the new partial travel ban, asking a federal judge to determine whether the administration had interpreted the court's decision too narrowly. Hawaii called the refusal to recognize grandparents and other relatives as an acceptable family relationship, quote, a plain violation of the Supreme Court's command. In the continuing battle over the future of the Affordable Care Act, a new CBO analysis says that the federal government will spend 35% less on Medicaid in two decades if the Senate repeal bill becomes law. Federal Medicaid outlays would be 26% less in 2026 compared to current law. The gap then widens to 35% in 2036. And finally, the Wall Street Journal Thursday evening broke a news story that, if true, could be the first real evidence of collusion between someone in the Trump campaign and Russian hackers. The Wall Street Journal's Shane Harris explains.
Peter W. Smith was 81 when he passed away about a month ago. Longtime Chicago businessman and pretty well-known GOP operative in some circles, he mounted a private effort beginning in Labor Day of last year during the campaign to obtain from hackers emails that he believed had been on Hillary Clinton's private server and that were stolen by hackers. And he went out and made contact with a number of groups, he claimed, including some in Russia. And in emails and in conversations with associates, Mr. Smith portrayed Michael Flynn as somebody who was aware of this effort and implied that he was an ally in that. We interviewed people who talked to Smith at the time who said that he told them he had been talking to General Flynn about this. Important to remember that at that time this was happening, Mike Flynn was the senior national security advisor to Donald Trump on the campaign. And this effort really began in earnest on the part of Mr. Smith about a month after Donald Trump famously at that Florida campaign rally said, Russia, if you're listening, could you please go find the 30,000 emails that Hillary Clinton claims she deleted from her server? That's what Smith was looking for.
And that's a bit of what's news for today. I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports and the Nicole Sandler Show, I hope you'll consider a contribution. We are 100% listener-supported, and we can't do it without your help. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com/donate.
Can't afford a monthly donation? Is that what's getting you down, Bunky? But maybe you shop on Amazon.com occasionally?
Well then, just use the NicoleSandler.com Amazon portal, and we'll get a small commission on all your purchases.
But I just bought...
Don't worry, we can't see what you bought.
Just bookmark Amazon through the NicoleSandler.com portal and use it. Every purchase helps Nicole stay on the air.
All right, I'm back, although my attorney is not. So let's try. He was supposed to call me, so let's try calling him because for some reason he's not there. So we're calling Bruce Jacobs of...
Office Jacobs Keeley, this is Elaine.
Hi, Bruce Jacobs, please.
He stepped out right now, ma'am.
Oh, no.
If he comes back, I could...
It's Nicole Sandler calling. He was supposed to be on an interview with me. Okay, I will try him on his cell.
Okay.
All right. Thank you. Bye-bye. All right. Well, that's not good. You know, attorneys, right? I'll tell you what we'll do. I'm going to play for you a little video. You might remember a couple of Fridays ago. Lauren Mayer. Lauren Mayer was on. She does song parodies. So she's got a new one out. It's a perfect time to hear from that while I try to reach my attorney, Bruce Jacobs. So we'll do that and hopefully come back with Bruce. Otherwise, it's you and me for the rest of the hour. All right, you ready? Let's go. Time to sing.
CBO, you rescued our healthcare from being
away. CBO proved their plan was wealth care, and see, it tanked. Hooray! You've been here since 1975 to analyze each bill, though Trump and GOP leaders contrive to say your work is swill. Still, CBOs, bipartisan experts, counted the bucks and said, this sucks, yippee, for CBO. CBO, what is it about you? 'Cause wow, you got their goats. But now there's not the votes. Poor Mitch McConnell is in a tough spot. His caucus wasn't swayed. Seems giant tax cuts for rich folks are not worth shredding Medicaid. Yay, CBO exposed all their meanness. They're vexed, they swear. What's next? Single payer could be.
And I ended that too soon. I'm sorry. Lauren Mayer, find her on Twitter at Lauren's Comedy. Psycho Comedy Mom, I think, is her YouTube account. Okay. I think we have Bruce Jacobs on the line. Bruce, you there?
I am here.
There
Hello,
he is.
Nicole. How
Hello.
Are you?
I'm doing fine. Bruce Jacobs, as I mentioned before, is my attorney. You can find him at debtwarriors.com. And Bruce, I was explaining to the listeners that we were talking the other day, and you've really stepped up. You are an attorney. You deal with a lot of the debt crisis, the mortgage crisis in this country, dealing with the foreclosure debacle still going on in the nation, even though we don't hear a lot about foreclosures. There's still a crisis in this nation, isn't it?
I mean, it's still happening. You have lots and lots of people who are stuck in mortgages that they can't afford. A vast majority of the loan mods that were given out went bad, went back into default. I mean, most people are still in trouble.
Yeah.
And, God willing, it's something that the government will eventually fix, but the fact that nobody's talking about it is why I think it's important to have good lawyers fighting for you.
And I'm lucky that I think I have the best lawyer fighting for me. So thank you for that.
Thank you, Nicole.
Right around the time of the Women's March, you stepped up. Your law firm stepped up and sponsored the Miami Women's. It was a rally in Miami, in downtown Miami, instead of a march. Mm-hmm. You've really become involved in the Miami-Dade Democratic Party. You've stepped up in a big way, really promoting progressive ideals and values, and trying to push the nation and certainly Florida into a more progressive position. It's got to be disheartening. We haven't spoken much since Trump took office, and the world just seems to be going to hell.
I mean, here it is to me. It's like I said this when we sponsored the Women's March. Like, the Women's March was such a powerful energy. Like, the people there were just all, it was just good energy.
Mm-hmm.
Good people. Women are powerful in the world. We thank God that we have them, because without them, the men would have destroyed everything long ago. And I think that there is a counterbalance to everything that we're seeing. And the idea that you're going to get frustrated and sit at home or just yell at people on Facebook, isn't really productive. There's a fight to have. Let's go have the fight. And it's not just about, fighting against Donald Trump, because he is, I think he represents a very small number of people who actually want him to do what he's doing. Look at the health care bill. There's 17% of the country thinks the health care bill is a good idea.
Yep.
As they've, put it in right now. But they're 6 months into this presidency, and the the most obvious thing that's happening is it's a battle between reasonable Republicans and these, far right, Rand Paul and Ted Cruz, people who don't think that the bill is cruel enough.
Yeah.
That they're not giving enough of a tax break to the rich people, and they're not throwing enough people off health care. And to me, the question is, as a progressive, as someone who, I have spent the last decade fighting banks. And I the reason why I love what I do is because I think that they are so responsible for, think about how many millions of people lost their home, and how many more millions of people lost their equity, and how many more millions of people lost their life savings all over the country. Because a bunch of executives in, a bunch of Wall Street firms wanted to get rich and wanted to put out a product they knew was bad for the country.
Right.
And got away with it because nobody in the government did anything about it. And now I look at to me it's like I saw a friend of mine who also does this work I do drew a very excellent comparison to the opioid epidemic. Have you been following this?
I have. And I'll tell you a story in a minute after you make your point. Yes, I've been following it closely, and it's frightening.
So you think about it. You have one of the newest members of the Forbes 500, whatever, top $14 billion person, the Sandlers, I think they are, Shaklers, whatever they are. These people made their money in opioids, selling OxyContin.
Wow.
And the way they did it was the same thing the banks did. They got a bunch of people who were respected, paid them lots of money to run around and get all the doctors to say, this is safe and it's not going to, you don't worry, you can prescribe it to your patients.
Yep.
And they pushed enough pills in the state of Ohio to have every man, woman, and child get 413 pills.
Wow.
And where was the government to stop this?
They haven't. So let me tell you, what I'm doing this weekend is detoxing. I fought lung cancer last year.
Right.
And I had surgery that removed most of my left lung. And there's still pain. I mean, I'm almost a year from the surgery, but I still have a lot of pain from it. And they put me on oxycodone. And so I've been taking it now coming up on a year. Well, I've been wanting to get off of it. I realize that I'm going to have this pain. It's pain that I'll deal with, that I'll try to use. I'll use CBDs or other things to try to kill the pain. But I want to get off these pills because I noticed when I tried to stop taking them, I got very sick. So what happens is, I guess it does kill the pain, but when I don't take it, I feel like I'm getting the flu. I get hot and cold, and I get not the shakes, but I get chilled, and I feel really, really sick. I've been trying to, to go down in the dosage, and they put me on a different medication and a different medication, all still opioids, though. Now I'm on methadone, believe it or not. I'm on, like, the smallest possible dose, and I'm breaking those pills in half, but I still can't. If I don't take it, I get sick. I get physically ill. So this is a 4-day weekend. This 4-day weekend, I'm not taking it, and I'm going to just be sick in bed for 4 days. And hopefully by Tuesday night, I'll have come through it. But that's how addictive it is. I've taken such small doses of this, but the thought that to not be sick, I may need to start taking more and more. So frightens me that I'm going to do whatever I need to do this way. And I'm doing it with the help of a psychiatrist. She said this is a really good plan, that because I'm taking such a small dose, I should be able to do it over these 4 days. But the thought just terrifies me. There is no help. The fact they're taking it for recreational purposes blows my mind. But usually they start taking it for pain. It's irresponsible.
I think what you're talking about, is like, first off, like I'm so thankful to hear that you're making that decision.
Yep.
And I wish you well this weekend and, buckle up, get a bunch of movies.
That's
you're
it.
Gonna get through it.
Yep.
And you'll be better off for it.
Absolutely.
But, most people are not as lucky as you. Most people, when their prescriptions run out for oxycodone, they go to a heroin dealer.
Yep.
Because it's an opioid.
Yeah.
And, it's like if you want to know why the white middle class voted for Trump, it's because you had the banks and the pharmaceutical companies destroying them with bad mortgages and bad opioids. Hmm. Like, just those two points alone, the government could have helped them and didn't.
Right.
Why? Because everyone in the government that all walks around, they're all, you know, more important than the other, and everyone's riding around in limousines and fancy schmancy and raising money by the millions from whoever. They're raising that money from pharmaceutical companies and Wall Street banks, and that's who they're beholden to. That's why nobody's getting prosecuted.
It's amazing.
You know, I was in the Second District Court of Appeals yesterday, and I made an argument which, you know, I wonder what's going to happen here. I have a case where the bank, we went to trial, and the bank put in an assignment of mortgage from MERS that says that MERS is selling the note and mortgage to the plaintiff. And during the trial, I got the witness to admit that was totally a lie. MERS never owns the note and mortgage, can't sell anything to the plaintiff. It was done routinely by the bank's lawyers right before they filed the foreclosure. They'd record a mortgage assignment. They put it in so they could use it in court and put it into evidence to say, see, I have the right to foreclose. This document that's recorded and it looks all official says that.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a lie. And what's interesting is that MERS, the system itself that we've all heard so much about, which is this, like, total nothing to me. Like, MERS doesn't even really say that. MERS says that you can't rely on their information because they don't validate any of it as accurate.
Wow.
But the MERS people say you can't use an assignment of mortgage that says we're assigning the note and mortgage. We can only assign the mortgage. And I'm like, wait a second. Florida Supreme Court and U.S. Supreme Court, going back to the 1800s, says you can't assign a mortgage. You can assign a note. You know, there's ways to do that contractually and selling whatever. But if you just assign the mortgage without the note, that's mm-hmm. a nullity. So meanwhile, it's 12 years into this crisis. We have seen the robo-signing scandal, the national mortgage settlement. You've seen all this ridiculousness. And here we are, 2017, in a trial, in a sacred space of a trial, in an equitable proceeding where unclean hands is a defense to foreclosure, you have this lie, this admitted false document. And we'll see what they do with it. You know, I mean, it may be that they do something about it. It may be that they don't.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. But, you know, to me it's like, you know, congressmen and presidents and executive officers and judges, they're all guardians of democracy. And reporters, they all have a very important role that they've all, it seems like the moneyed interests have bought them all up.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we're trying to fight against. If we can't beat that, and, you know, one thing I'd say, if you're a progressive, we got to figure out how to get at least the Democratic Party to shift its funding sources away from these corporations, because these corporations are going to continue to give us poison and continue to sell us bad mortgages and, you know, get us to sign mortgages they know are going to be worthless for their benefit. And it's been happening for decades, and thank God people are awake enough to say Donald Trump can fix it, but they're going to realize he's... I mean, I don't know
he's
how much longer
problem.
It takes for a Trump person to realize they're not helping by, you know, Trump care isn't helping any of us.
Right. No, and he's not on the side of the little guy who's hurting, who's in a underwater in a bad mortgage. He's
don't
on
tell
the,
that to a Trump guy,
right? Well,
I mean that's the craziness is that the Trump people, they look at it like, you know, he's doing his best, he's trying, he's just stuck in this crazy, you know, DC world where everyone's after him.
Oh God!
You know, and it's all the Democrats' fault. But the truth is, like, most of the problem are the Republican establishment who doesn't want him to do anything.
Well,
they keep blocking him from stuff.
Well, the Republican establishment just wants to pass their own agenda. That's why they look the other way for all his personal issues. I mean, he's got some serious personal issues. And they deal with it. They let him all slide because they think he's going to be their key to massive tax cuts for the wealthy and to undoing the Affordable Care Act. And to, I don't know, I don't understand what their end game is. They want us all out on the street. They want Hoovervilles again.
I mean, I think what they want is whatever the donor class wants. The donor class wants to have less taxes because they could become the next, they want to be the first trillionaire. Oh. I personally think that the idea that we, you know, I keep going back to, Teddy Roosevelt at the end of the 1800s, mm-hmm. was president of the United States. He's a Republican.
Right.
And Teddy Roosevelt took on J.P. Morgan Chase in the first antitrust lawsuits because J.P. Morgan Chase was setting up a monopoly. And, you know, what ended up happening was Teddy Roosevelt busted that monopoly up.
Mm-hmm.
And he did it because what he said was, if you let rich people become more powerful than the government itself, that is a danger to everybody else. And that's exactly what we're dealing with today.
It is. You know, it's funny you bring up Teddy Roosevelt because I was on your Facebook page and I found you posted a snippet of a speech from FDR, from Franklin Roosevelt, the second Bill of Rights
sure.
speech. In fact, I have it here because people need to hear it today. So if you don't mind, it's just under 2 minutes. This
yeah,
is
go,
FDR.
Go
it was on January 11th, 1944.
In our day, certain economic proofs have become accepted as self-evident. A second Bill of Rights, under which a new basis of security and prosperity can be established for all, regardless of station or race or creed. Among these are the right to a useful and remunerative job, the right to earn enough to provide adequate food and clothing and recreation, the right of every farmer to raise and sell his products at a return which will give him and his family a decent living, the right of every businessman, large and small, to trade in an atmosphere of freedom, freedom from unfair competition and domination by monopolies at home or abroad, the right of every family to a decent home, the right to adequate medical care, and the opportunity to achieve and enjoy good health, the right to adequate protection from the economic fears of old age, sickness, accident, and unemployment, the right to a good education. All of these rights spell security. And after this war is won, we must be prepared to move forward in the implementation of these rights to new goals of human happiness and well-being. For unless there is security here at home, there cannot be lasting peace in the world.
You know, I get goosebumps listening to that, Bruce Jacobs. It's what everybody needs to hear today.
You know what was beautiful? I was just on vacation. I went up to this place in Georgia, and it was like, it was right near a place called Warm Springs, Georgia, which is where FDR had his summer White House.
Right.
And it was a beautiful tour, and like, it was one point that I actually got very like emotional because it was like Teddy Roosevelt or FDR had polio.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like
yep.
the same stuff that Mitch McConnell had. And when Mitch McConnell got polio, he had the government pay for all of his health care. And now the guy is pulling health care from everybody else. But polio back in the day was this like scourge. It was like if you got polio, no one knew how you got it. And it you were kind of quarantined with your family. And you had this horrible disease that all of a sudden you couldn't walk. He was in a wheelchair. He couldn't
right.
walk anymore. And what was his third term as president? Remember, FDR led us out of the Great Depression.
Yep.
And he was the only president that ever served for three terms. And then when he died in his third term, they passed a constitutional amendment to say there's a two-term limit.
Right.
But he when you, like, you know, I recommend anyone take a tour of that, you know, or spend some time learning about FDR, because, you know, think about it, like, it was during the Depression, as we're going into war, this guy led the nation.
That's right.
And did it from a wheelchair. And, you know, and he had this, you know, this, it was like the polio that he suffered. He built these, he was living in Warm Springs in the sun. He was going to Warm Springs because being in the warm water was apparently very helpful to his, you know, recovery, his treatment.
Right.
And he actually created this pool and invited people with polio from all over the world to come there for treatment. And, you know, to me, what was the most, like, beautiful part about it all was there was a display of canes, wooden canes and very ornate, you know, hand-carved, all kinds of different designs and whatever that went along the entire wall.
Hmm.
And it was gifts that people had sent him from all over the world, a cane to help him.
Wow.
Because they loved him so much, and you could see the detail and the effort. It's not something they bought in a store.
Right. Wow.
You know, and that kind of leadership is what we need today. Imagine if we had, if we just picked up with that second Bill of Rights,
yep,
and said we're going to make sure that people could have a job. We have enough resources to give people jobs. We could put together just going out and putting out solar and wind.
That's right.
You know, panels wherever we need them. It could really get a lot of people working. You know, it's amazing to me how we don't. We have hundreds of billions of dollars to pay for the military to keep us safe, yet we don't have enough money to pay for health care?
Well, we do. It's just that, you know, that people don't want to pay taxes. Well, taxes, that's how we pay for everything that we have in our society. That's how we pay for the roads.
Yeah.
And we have our infrastructure crumbling because they just want to give tax cuts to the billionaires instead of having them pay a little bit more. Back in the days of FDR, the tax rate was a lot higher. And people, well, after the Depression, people did okay.
You know, I think it's interesting because we've heard all these lies that have become just truths because they've been said over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but if you tax a company, you know, let's say you have a 80%, you know, corporate tax rate. You know, that is on profits. And what that actually does is it encourages the corporations to reinvest their money into the corporation and build more and create more tax deductions by having more employees, having more products, having more services, having more resources. That's the idea behind it. It's not just so that the government can take all the money. It's so that you could be encouraged to spend the money instead of creating these billionaires,
right,
who are really not, they're hoarding the money. And to me, it's a question of, you know, as a progressive, like, you know, I got involved in the fight because of what I saw with these banks. It's wrong. It's just flat out wrong. And if you know what I know, you know that this is destroying democracy.
Mm-hmm.
And if you care enough about your, I have four kids, so I care about the next generation. And I want to see change. You know, and that's why I got involved. That's why I became a Bernie Sanders delegate. I went to the DNC, and I'll tell you, it was very clear when we were there. There were a lot of people who were saying the DNC, the Democratic Party, needs to change.
Mm-hmm.
And there were a lot of people in the Democratic Party who were saying, you people need to go find somewhere else to bring that because we're not changing.
Wow.
And that's the fight.
And,
you know, and here I am now. I mean, years later, you know, I'm here a year and a half later, I'm involved in the lawsuit where I'm suing the Democratic Party for the Democratic Party.
Right.
Because the Democratic Party has, you know, a leadership right now. The chairman of the state party in Florida got there because the lobbyists broke every rule to put him there.
That's right. So you're suing the party to have Stephen Battelle removed as the Florida chair. We've only got about a minute left, Bruce. So I know you have toyed with the idea of running for office. Is that something you think you might do?
So here's my thought. You know, I would, I certainly want to help get into this fight in any way that's meaningful. And right now, what I'm trying to do is just go win my battles.
Okay.
If I can beat Bank of America,
please,
and make that known that these people are doing things. God willing, these judges on the second DCA are going to see, yeah, you know what, you can't put a fake assignment and mortgage still in the case. And that is going to raise my level to people will know who I am.
Right.
Because right now I'm just a regular guy like everybody else.
Yep.
Nobody knows me.
Right.
You know, but if I can knock Stephen Battelle out of the party and make it so that they're going to have to follow their rules and they're not going to be able to just steal the party from us, you know, if that leads to something, yes, I would love to be involved in this fight because I care about what's going on.
And you
I think
do.
That we've lost our way.
Bruce Jacobs,
it's got to be a group thing.
Yeah, absolutely. If people want to find you, they can find you on Facebook for sure. You're a BJA Legal. Your website is debtwarriors.com. I'll put both of them on my blog at NicoleSandler.com along with the podcast of today's show. And I know you're more than happy to engage with anyone who wants to help in the fight. Bruce, you rock. I can't thank you enough for everything.
Nicole, you rock, and I can't thank you for enough for anything. Good luck this weekend.
Thank you.
You go kick ass. Don't worry about it.
I will do that. And I'll talk to you soon. Thank
All
you
right.
so much.
Take care. Bye.
You too. Bye-bye. Bruce Jacobs, everyone. All right. Have a very happy 4th of July. We're out.
When they say we want our America back, our America back. Our America back. When they say they want our America back, what the fuck do they mean? Remember the Garden of Eden, before Eve hung out with that snake. You could walk down the street, not worry about thieves. All the kids could go trick-or-treating. Then those foreigners started coming in, like those Germans in 1790. Then the Irish arrived, the potato blight. The neighborhood started changing. Life was better, we lived right. Life had a paler shade of white. When they say we want our America back, we want our America back. Before there was Ellis Island and that statue we got from the French, and that whore still alerting the strangers she's flirting, inviting them into our beds. The Guineas, the coolies, the wetbacks, the Jews, the gays and the terrorists. And who let in that woman, looks after my kids, and the one who is cleaning my mess. Life was righteous, life was clean. Send them back, including me. When they say we want our America back, our America back, our America back. When they say we want our America back, what the fuck does it mean? Before the gays had the agenda, before the slaves were free, before that man from Kenya took the presidency. We want our America back, our America back, our America back. When they say we want our America back, what the fuck does that mean?